Welcome to Fit Food Junkies, Addicted to Health. My name is Emily E, and I'm a certified group fitness instructor and personal trainer. We will not only talk about fitness, nutrition, and business, but also explore how to build a strong mindset, have ultimate motivation, and how to reach your breakthrough in life. Let's start on our health and fitness journey together.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Fit Food Junkies. I don't know if you know, but I actually grew up with scoliosis, which is the curvature of your spine, and I had a ton of back pain growing up. I'm so grateful that I was able to avoid surgery after wearing a back brace for a good amount of time as a kid. Not only am I so grateful that my back is able to support me in all the activities I do, but it is extremely important for me to make sure my back stays strong. That's why I continuously, every day, use Chirp. Chirp is the world's simplest back and neck pain relief. Just lay on it, release, and roll. I do it in the morning, take little work breaks throughout the day, before and after my workouts, runs, and so much more. My back thanks me for it, and Chirp allows me to live my crazy active life. Maybe you're a runner, or maybe your back hurts from sitting at your desk all day, or maybe you're just living your everyday life. Whatever it is, check out Chirp. Focus on relief and recovery with Chirp so you can keep bringing out your inner athlete. Use my code FFJ at checkout to receive 10% off. That's all caps FFJ. Go Chirp.
Jeremy Miller is a digital creator, marathon and ultra runner with his motto, stronger, faster, and farther. Jeremy went from running 2 miles a day to qualifying for the Boston Marathon. He's also the founder of the electrolyte company Switchback. Jeremy says, even if we fail, we will end up so much further ahead of where we would have been if we set our realistic goal. I challenge you to set goals that seem impossible. Jeremy, welcome to the Fit Food Junkies podcast.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. That was quite the intro.
You know, I wrote it down. I was like, ooh, I'm inspired right now. Like, let's go. What I think is so cool is you went from running 2 miles to qualifying for the Boston Marathon. Really interesting is I also interviewed Matt Choi a little bit ago, and he had a very similar story, right? He didn't grow up being this avid runner. And I think it's super cool because if people look at your page, they're probably like, oh yeah, I could never do what Jeremy does. Like, I could never qualify for Boston. I could never do the insane race you just did a couple days ago. So tell me a little bit about how you got started into this whole journey of running farther and faster and stronger and all the things.
I hated running so much my whole life. I played sports, like hockey and baseball were my two main sports. And you don't really run a whole lot in those sports, and if you do, it's usually for punishment. Mm-hmm. So I just always hated it because of that. But my mom actually ran a lot of half marathons. I think it was in 2013. She did 13 half marathons. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's psycho. 13 half marathons? Mm-hmm. This is so crazy. Because I think at the time I was, you know, like 14 or 15. So I had no context of what running was like. And a half marathon seemed like so far to me, 13 miles. So I always kind of had that in the back of my mind. I never ran at all. And then when Bree and I, my fiance now, when we lived in Hawaii for a year for an exchange program, mm-hmm. I was sitting on the bus one day just listening to the Joe Rogan podcast. And this guy, David Goggins, came on and I was like, never heard of this guy. But I heard his story for the first time. And I was like, this guy is crazy.
Who's going to carry the boats?
Yeah. And he's talking about like he ran 100 miles without training around this 1 mile loop and just all these like crazy ultra endurance events that he did. And his story, I don't know if you know much about his childhood, but he had like really terrible dad and like this terrible upbringing and stuff, and it kind of resonated with me just because like at the time my parents were going through this divorce, mm-hmm. and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I was in college and I was like, I don't really like this degree that I'm pursuing, and I just felt like I was missing something. And so hearing him talk about using running as a tool to like explore your own mind and like learn more about yourself and push your limits, that resonated so much with me. So I started, I think after I heard him on that podcast, I went home, grabbed my running shoes. There's like some shitty shoes I had at home, and went for like a 1 mile run. And I was gassed after like 4 minutes because I was just running as hard as I could. I didn't know you're supposed to like slow down a little bit and run for like a long period of time. And so I basically did that. I tried to set a new 1 mile PR like every day. And I did that for like a few months, and I'm like, plateaued pretty hard, obviously, because mm-hmm. that's not how you train. And I was like, okay, if I want to go faster or be able to go farther, I'm going to have to slow down a little bit. So I started learning how to like train heart rate, how to just slow down a little bit. And then I did like 3 miles and then 4 miles and then slowly worked up. I think after maybe the first year or two, I finally did my first 10 mile run and that felt like eternity. I felt like I was just out there for hours and hours. I had gels and water bottles and all this stuff with me. And then fall of 2020, I had a friend talk me into doing this, what was it called? Like an endurance challenge, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was 12 hours. You had from 6:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. to run as many miles as you could. So you had 12 hours. It was like this 8 mile loop in the mountains in Wyoming. And I was like, okay, maybe I've heard people run 100 miles in 24 hours. Maybe we could do 50 miles in 12 hours. So I had this goal to run 50 miles, and I think I ended up doing like 43, but I didn't train at all. Like I was maybe doing 10 miles a week at the time. And that gave me a lot of confidence because I was like, okay, if I actually commit to something and train for it and I do it the right way, if I did 43 miles without all that, okay, what could I do if I actually trained and did it the right way? So that gave me confidence and some motivation to like just keep working at running. And that race is where I really fell in love with running, I think, because it was such a mental challenge. I felt like I grew so much as a person from that. And so from there, I did like a half marathon, marathon, and eventually qualified for Boston. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff in there, but
so inspiring. It sounds like the impetus for you to begin your running journey was the pain that you related to with David Goggins in your life.
Yeah. I feel like I saw a reel about this on Instagram the other day about something along the lines of like most endurance athletes of any kind, like Ironmans, ultra runners, whatever, marathon runners, like a lot of it comes from this place. Maybe it was like trauma or like suffering. Like maybe they had some hardship they had to go through in life, because I think if you have to endure something really hard in real life, and then you go and run a marathon, like that mental pain, like the mental difficulty that comes with a marathon, I don't think it ever really compares to shit that happens in real life where it's like emotional and personal. So I think maybe that's why it resonated so much, is because like so many people's parents go through divorces. I'm like, I'm not the only one whose parents went through a divorce, but one thing that's supposed to be stable in your life is not there. Then you're like, oh geez. And especially, I think I was like 17 when they started going through it, so it was like just this crazy time in life. And I felt like running was a good outlet for that, because you could just go and push yourself and think through things. And again, I think with running, it just requires so much mental fortitude. And I think that when you have some real thing in life, it's it just makes running that much easier.
Yeah, I think that's so cool, because I feel like when I run, I think all runners can relate to this. It's like, it is therapy. Like your mind wanders. You think about things, you go through pain, you utilize pain to go faster, to go further. And it's just like this really cool journey. And it's kind of wild. Like, I mean, I don't think you should belittle it like, oh, I just went through divorce. Like you went through your own journey with that, and you were able to allow fitness and running to be your outlet. And that's what I'm so obsessed about, is like, it is therapy, right? Yeah. Can't afford therapy? Just start running.
Yeah. It's definitely cheaper than therapy. And I think the cool thing with it too is, I mean, you know, if therapy works for people, or if you need antidepressant pills or something, but I think if you can work through those things on your own, like under your own volition through something like running or exercising, I think you get so much more out of it. And there's even a study that came out, I think it was in Australia, came out earlier this year in March, that showed that exercise of any kind, like they did breath work, yoga, walking, running, strength training, all of those had 1.5 times more beneficial at reducing the symptoms of anxiety and depression than both pills, antidepressants, or SSRIs, and therapy. And I was like, that's like, I experienced that firsthand 100%. I've never done therapy or been on like prescription antidepressants or anything, but I know that like if I'm having a shitty day, if I'm feeling like not great, if I go for a run or go lift or something, I feel 10 times better. Because I think it gives you so much confidence in yourself, and it's such a tangible way to set goals and achieve goals and to keep making progress. And I think a lot of it too comes down to the confidence, for sure. Because I think if you're not constantly pursuing some kind of goal in life, you probably just feel kind of lost a lot of times. And so with running, not that your goals are like, if I run a 3-hour marathon or a 4-hour marathon, does it really matter? Not really. But by setting this goal and going out and putting in the work and achieving it, I think that's, it just gives you so much confidence.
Hmm. I know that you failed your sub 3 hour marathon attempt. You missed it by 2 seconds per mile.
Yeah.
Which is, oh my God. I can't even imagine how you felt afterward, right? I mean, it's already an accomplishment what you've done, but when you're like, 2 seconds?
Yeah.
Take me through your mindset through this insane running marathon, no pun intended, right? Like this whole journey. 2 seconds. Like, tell me about your mindset. Tell me about your goals. Tell me about you trying to achieve the impossible.
Yeah, so my first marathon was a 3 hour marathon for your first one is pretty dang good. I'll admit that.
Yeah.
And I really don't know how I did it because my training was not near what it should have been. Like my peak mileage was so much lower from where it should have been. My nutrition was like non-existent. I didn't carb load. I think I took like 2 gels during the race. Didn't do anything remotely like I should have. Mm-hmm. But I still gritted through a 3 hour and 54 second marathon. And so, like, you never know if you can actually run 26 miles until you run 26 miles. Like,
right.
I think my longest training run was like, I did a 24 mile run. That gave me confidence, but still at the end of the day, you don't know if you can actually do it. And so there's always kind of this unknown going into a race, or like a new distance, or if you have a new time goal. I think that's part of the intrigue to running is you don't really ever know unless you go out and try it, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I had the audacious goal to go run a sub 3 on my first one. And it was 2 seconds a mile that
that's
I missed
crazy.
It. So 54 seconds. I think I would have rather missed it by like 54 minutes, 54 seconds, because that haunted me for so long. And literally the very next day I signed up for my next marathon and hired a coach because I was like, okay, I did this without the proper training. There's got to be a right way to do this. So I hired a coach and then 3 months later, qualified for Boston, ran like 2:58, which on paper it was like 2.5 minutes faster. But
it's a lot.
But the way that I felt after both of those, like my first marathon, I was laying on the ground for like 30 minutes. I was like dead basically because I pushed so hard because I gave absolutely everything I had. And then my second marathon, the only goal was just to go sub 3. I actually trained properly. I knew what to expect going into that second race. I just felt so much better. Like I was walking around. I was like, you know, I had like a beer in my hand. Like I was just like a totally different person from that first marathon
That's
3
crazy.
Months earlier. I think that just shows you what proper training can do.
What do you think your why is? I mean, many people would say they've hit their goal, they're done. Why do you keep doing this?
Oh, gosh. Running is addicting, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think because you're kind of always chasing another goal, that's what makes it so addicting, is you can always run faster, you can always do a further distance. I think about this a lot, and I don't know if I can really pin it to one specific thing, but I think in general, it's just, I love the saying of how you do anything is how you do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to be like a professional runner. I know, at least right now, I'm probably not going to be like qualifying for the Olympics or something. But I like to use running as like this tool because it's such a tangible thing that you can use to set a goal, put in the work, and see the reward that comes from that.
Yeah.
And I think just using that to practice that concept of like work to reward ratio and then apply that to everyday life, whether it's your relationships or your business. And I love running, but it's like, running isn't like my purpose for my existence, but using that to further provide value to people and, you know, whether it's through a business or through content or making sure you show up and be a good partner in a relationship or a good dog dad or something. Like it's, I think running teaches you all those things. I think any physical endeavor can teach you that.
Yeah.
I also like the saying of like, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the classic, put on your air mask in the airplane before the person next to you, before you help the person next to you. And it's like, I think if you can show up every day, put yourself first, like first thing in the morning, go get your activity in, journal, meditate, whatever you have to do. And then you can give to other people. I think what you can give to other people will always be so much better if you take care of yourself first. Because it's true. I don't think you can pour from an empty cup. Like even like on days that I miss a run or I miss a workout or I'm sick or I slept in or something, I just, something always feels off that day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And that's always a good reminder of like, okay, this is why I get up and do it every day. Because most days I don't want to get up and do it. But
right.
It's always a good reminder that there's a reason why you do it.
Oh, yeah. There is like, it's so funny. Like sometimes I will not, I mean, it's kind of bad. Sometimes I will like prioritize my workouts over everything, which is good and bad, right? Sometimes I'm like, all right, chill out for a second. But I know that I will be at my best self when I get it in, and I know I will make myself my priority, and I also will be filling my cup by moving my body and then showing up for other people. So, you know, I know sometimes people might be like, all right, like, chill out, you're addicted. that's like why my motto is addicted to health, is because I used to be addicted in like a really negative, unhealthy way to exercise, to food.
Yeah.
And now I found like the healthy addiction that I'm obsessed with. And that's all the whole junkie part of it too.
It's definitely a healthy addiction. I mean, I think everybody has to be addicted or obsessed with something.
Yeah.
So you might as well pick something that's going to make you better.
Yeah. And it is true. You said how you show up in your workouts or running and in that addiction. Like, it's really how you show up outside of it.
Yeah.
And I tell that to people in my group fitness classes too. It's like every rep, if you stop and you give up, you're going to show up like that outside of this room.
Yeah.
It translates.
Yeah. How you do anything is how you do everything.
Tell me about this race that you just did.
Yeah.
62 1 mile concrete loops.
Yeah. It was not my smartest idea, but there was a reason for it. So I was signed up for a 100K trail race.
I remember that.
Over by Houston. And then 3 days before the race, they canceled it because there was a day of rain or something in the state park. I was like, okay, we don't want the trail to get ruined by having, you know, hundreds of runners running on this muddy course. So it makes sense. Yeah, so they canceled the race 3 days before. They sent us out an email. I'm in this big group chat with, like, all these people that are running the race because we all kind of know each other. I'm like, okay, we can't just not run. Like, we had an Airbnb booked. We had, like, people flying in from all over the country. I had, like, content I needed to get for brands, and I had a photographer, all this stuff. So, like, okay, we're all too invested and committed to this race to not do something. So we planned out this one-mile route up in Dallas, Texas, because that's where the bulk of people were. So we're like, okay, we'll just go up to Dallas. It was around this church that a lot of these guys went to. And so it was just this perfect one-mile loop around this big parking lot. And we called it Run Your Race 1 to 100 Miles. Because there's some people that were doing like the half marathon version of the trail race, or I was doing the 100K. A lot of people signed up for the 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, okay, well, let's just open it up to the public. So we like, started putting it out on social media. And we had over 100 people show up.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How did you think, I mean, 62 laps of like the same scenery, was that like, do you think that was more like a mental challenge for you?
Oh, definitely.
Because you're in the same route.
Yeah, I've done 2 50-mile ultramarathons, and they were both in the mountains up in Wyoming, and they took longer because it's mountainous, so you have to go a little bit slower. I think those took like 12 or 13 hours, and this one only took me like 9, but it was so much harder. Obviously, it was a further distance than those, but just the mental aspect was so, so hard. It was like, it felt like one big continuous loop, because I was running like 8 to 9 minute pace for most of it.
Yeah.
So like every time I would see a new part of the course, it was only 9 minutes later from where I just saw it. So it was like, I was always seeing the same thing. Now thinking back on it, I feel like it kind of went quickly. Like I could just really turn my brain off and not have to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just let my mind wander wherever. But in the moment, it felt like so long, because it was just like, same thing over and over and over, 62 times.
How long did it take?
It was 9.5 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it was
like,
did
you stop at all?
I didn't sit down at all. I walked a little bit. I probably walked maybe like 2 miles out of the 62.
Okay.
Because that's the other hard part about it, as opposed to other races I've done, is I would see my like little aid station every mile. So it was so easy, and I'd walk right through it. I'd walk literally right by it. And so it's so easy to stop and like grab a drink or grab some fruit, grab a gel, or like say what's up to the guy I had there filming me. And so that was challenging, because on like a real race, like you're not seeing an aid station every mile.
Right.
So that was challenging. The first like 30 miles, I only stopped a couple times, but the last 30, I basically was stopping every mile to like just kind of on the go. Like I'd just walk over, grab a water bottle, and then keep going. I was like, I don't really need to be stopping, but it's just like, it was a good change of something, because the rest of the loop was just the same thing over and over.
Oh, and you just posted about it on social, and people just wanted to sign up for this long of a race?
Yeah, so there was, again, there was like 100 people that showed up, a ton of people doing like their very first 5K, or their very first half marathon, or their very first 50K. Like, there were so many people out there doing their first distance of some kind, and then there was even 15 or 20 people that did 100 miles, and I'm like, I'm good. I'm stopping at 62. 62 is good enough for me for today. So, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, that's amazing. You got so many people last minute to do 100 miles.
Yeah. Well, I think most people that were doing 100 miles were probably already signed up in training, but I think there was a couple people that just showed up and were like, hey, I'm going to do 100 miles today.
My God.
They tried talking me into it, but I'm like, I only trained for 62. I want to be smart about it. I don't want to, like, go and get hurt. Because I've been hurt so many times from running, from being like that. I'm like, I don't know. Oh, this guy's doing 100. I should do 102. And then I just get hurt, and then I can't run for several months.
So, Wow. So why? Like, you, this race got canceled. You could have just said, it's fine. I know you've been training for it for a while.
Yeah.
I know we talked about your why, but, like, what made you do this, Jeremy?
Oh, that's a good question. I asked myself that several times. And again, I think it comes down, there's a couple of things. One, the idea of how you do anything is how you do everything. If you have something you're planning in life, like, say you're, like, you tell your friend you're going to meet him somewhere this weekend, and then something might prevent you from doing that. Like, are you just going to cancel? Or are you going to... this is not a good analogy. Basically, if you say you're going to do something...
Commit.
Just commit and do it. Yeah, I like that idea of just how you do anything is how you do everything. I think that comes back to me a lot, because I think it just bleeds into all other things in life. And I think it's so true. And then the other part of that, too, is... So I do a lot of social media content. Mm-hmm. And I think there was maybe... I don't know, 20 or 30 people there that came specifically because they saw some of my posts. Mm-hmm. And that kept me going a lot, too. Not that any of those people would care if I stopped or if I didn't show up or whatever. Like, they probably really wouldn't care that much. But to me, it's like, oh my gosh, I have to show up because these people are going to be there. Like, these people online are watching. They've been following my training journey. Mm-hmm. And again, not that they really care. They would, it would matter to them if I didn't do it. But I think showing up and going through and following through on what you say you're going to do. I think that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I'd say also with a half marathon, the one in Austin last year. So I had a horrible flu. It was like bad, like chills, like bad flu. And I remember I signed up a while ago for this half. It was my second half. And I'm like, I have the flu. Like, this is not great. And I was like literally lying in bed, couldn't move, like bad. And I was starting to feel better as I was getting into the half, like right before. And the day before, I was going to bed and I was like, I'm getting better. I can like get out of bed. I'm not great. But I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to do this. And it was so funny. I was on the phone with my parents. They were like, don't do the marathons. Don't do the half marathon tomorrow. Like, you're fine. It's not like you're not, you don't need to do this. There's no reason to do this. Like, rest. You don't need to do this, right? And so I ended up doing it. And I really pushed myself hard. Of course, I wouldn't have done it if I was like in my deathbed, but I started to feel better. I was still pretty sick, but I was a lot better, but still not good. And it was so funny. I called my parents. Did you guys think I was going to do it? Even though, obviously, I told your dad before doing it, no question. And he was like, yeah, for sure. Not even worth it to tell her not to.
That's so funny.
So I just thought it was so funny because, like, it is. It's true. Like, if you commit to something and that's how you show up in other areas of your life, obviously listen to your body. But, you know, sometimes you just got to do it.
Yeah, there's a balance to it, I think. And, I mean, you know your body better than anybody else. Yeah. Like, you know what you're capable of. And I think at the same time, we all leave so much untapped potential.
Yeah.
Like, we do way more than we think we can.
Yeah.
And I think running is such a good tool for that because
you
get, like, these little incremental wins. Like, I think if you told the average person, like, go run 5 miles, they're like, I can't run 5 miles. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But if they actually went and tried and did it, they probably could.
Right.
And it's going to take them, you know, varying lengths of time to do it. But I think, again, running is such a tangible way to see growth and mental growth, especially because for me, I'm such an impatient person. Like, I want everything right now, and I want it, like, I set some goal or something, I want to accomplish it right now. But like, that race on Saturday took 9.5 hours in this damn parking lot, and the whole time I'm just like, insane. I can't wait to be done. I was counting down every single lap.
That's so
crazy. So running teaches you how to be patient, I think, too, especially the longer the race, obviously, because there's more time you have to be patient. So I think that's I think the patience is one of the biggest things I've taken out of running because I'm such an impatient person in real life. And I think most people probably are the way our brains are. We want everything right now. And running forces you to slow down. And that was also, it was 9.5 hours of like no phone, no technology, no headphones, no nothing. It was just like me and my thoughts and this concrete basically. So
what do you mean when you say running forces you to slow down?
In your mind, I think it forces you to slow down because I think in our everyday lives, like, we're just so stimulated by so many things, like our phones or the TV, or there's always something happening. And I think we're like always just moving at this really fast pace all the time. And we don't ever take time, or rarely take time, to just sit down and like meditate basically. And like be with your own thoughts and no other distractions. And I think running allows you to do that. It almost forces you to do that, I think. And I think it just forces you to be present more than anything. Yeah. Especially, I don't ever run with headphones or anything.
Yeah.
And I think that helps a lot, because when you're running, like, your mind might wander and think about something else for a minute, but pretty quickly it'll come right back to like, okay, we're running.
Yeah.
I'm kind of uncomfortable. How much longer do we have?
Yeah.
And it just forces you to be present and just be in the moment.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's not a lot of things that make you do that.
Yeah, I interviewed a former CEO of ASICS, and really amazing guy. He was telling me also, when he was running, it was his meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is so cool. Like, your mind wanders, you think. As you do that, especially during these insane races, what do you tell your mind when you're... Because I know, I mean, I can't relate to your crazy races, but even at the half marathon, I know when I'm at my last couple miles, like, there's things I tell myself. You know, those last few miles, there's definitely something you tell your mind. You're getting outside your comfort zone. You're reaching your breaking point where your body wants to stop.
Right.
But your mind says go. And you tell yourself something. What is it that you tell yourself?
That's a good question. That's like the $1 million question.
Right?
Because that's what gets you to the finish line.
Yeah.
I always just tell myself, like, one more step. If I can just keep taking one more step, that's all I can ever do, right?
Yeah.
Really, I literally just tell myself that. Just take one more step. I think that goes for anything. Like,
yeah.
If you're going through something hard in life, if you can just get to, like, the next day or the next hour or whatever you're going through, just, like, get to that next thing, which you always can.
Yeah.
You can always do one more step, one more thing. And I think that just helps to chunk it down, too, of, like, okay, I don't want to think about the last 10 miles. That's going to take, you know, 90 minutes. I don't want to think about how, oh my God, I have to run for another 90 minutes around this damn parking lot. But if I can just take one more step and just keep doing that over and over and over again, I think that helps me get through those hard moments.
I did a sprint triathlon, and I'm not a swimmer. And instead of looking at the finish line, like, I would just look at every buoy to get me to, like, each part of the goal throughout the swim, because I'm not a swimmer. I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I sign up for this? But then you bring into your why and the reason and all the things, right? But I like to also kind of split it up, like, each step, taking it. Okay, cross that, 10 mile. Okay, next couple of miles.
Yeah.
So
it's like segmentation, I think, is what it's called. I think it's like a military or like Navy SEAL term or something, I've heard. Yeah, for the longer races, even a marathon, I do that. Like, I'll chunk it up into like every 4 miles, because I take a gel every 4 miles during a marathon. So it's like, okay, we have these like 4 or 5 4-mile chunks.
Yeah.
And then we'll just worry about the next 4 miles. Don't worry about all 26. Yeah. Just get to that next gel. And then that's a checkpoint to get to the next one. I think breaking it down and chunking it down into like those little segments, I think, can help a lot. Another thing I always tell myself later on in a race, especially a marathon, is, like, I always think back to how I felt. Say I'm at mile 20 and I'm hurting, I want to quit, I want to walk. I'll think back to how I felt at mile 10, and usually it's like kind of relatively the same pain, because like, after a certain point, like, your legs just kind of just hit this point, like, it doesn't go beyond that pain level. And I'm like, okay, I made it the last, like, 90 minutes since then. Why couldn't I go another 40 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, with that same kind of pain in my legs?
Yeah.
I think that helps a lot. I don't know if that makes sense at all.
No, it does make sense. You're like, I could do this. It's no difference now. Because I know for me, like, you don't get me wrong, yes, a couple steps. But there's also something, like, from growing up or something that's happened to me in my life that allows me to feel that pain in running and allows me to keep pushing forward to the finish line. I know you talked about your parents' divorce. Do you think about that now still when you run?
Sometimes. I don't know if I think about it all the time. I don't think about that specifically, but I think about where I used to be and like how difficult everything used to feel. So much of it is confidence.
Yeah.
And just reminding myself, like, okay, I've been here before. I've felt this pain, like, both physically or emotionally.
Yeah.
And I got through that, so why couldn't I get through this?
Yeah.
I think that's a good reminder. I think of it maybe more from, like, a macro level.
Yeah.
As opposed to that specifically.
Yeah.
But in the, like, when I first got into running, that was, like, the only thing I would think about.
Because
that was, like, 5 years ago when I first started running. So the first couple of years, that was, like, all I thought about. And I felt like I kind of got over that hump, and that's where... For the first couple of years of running, it was pure suffer fest, because I was just running so hard. My body wasn't used to it at all. And to get through like a 4 mile run, I had to go to like a really dark place.
Yeah.
But now running is so much more enjoyable, and it becomes more meditative.
Yeah.
That I don't really have to like go to the pain cave to knock out like a 4 or 5 mile run.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because it's just more enjoyable that way. But I think initially that's what got me into running was like, oh, I can I can go dark. I can go to the pain cave for 30 or 45 minutes to get through this run. That's the hard thing with running. I always compare it to a drug because it's like you get like a little bit of that like hit early on. You get over that, you kind of get used to it, but then you have to keep, that's how you end up running 62 miles in a parking lot. It's like, that's how you go from smoking weed in high school to like doing heroin. It's because you're like, just keep chasing more and more high, basically. And it's like, now I could go run a half marathon. And just because my perspective has changed so much from where it was 5 years ago, like it's like, oh, I could go do that right now if I wanted to. But if I want to really push and challenge myself, I'm going to have to go run 62 miles in a parking lot. So it's like your perspective is always changing.
So crazy.
And you're like always setting bigger and bigger goals, I think. So it can get addictive like a drug in that way.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest misconception is about running?
I feel like one of the biggest things is that running will make you like soft and weak and skinny. And I think it could if that's all you do. Because running arguably is not the most healthy thing from a physical standpoint. If that's all you do is run. Obviously, it's great for your cardiovascular system, but hormonally and like on your bones and your joints, it's not amazing. But that's why I think if you couple it with cross training or strength training, it can be so good because they balance each other out. Like if you just lift and that's all you do, your cardiovascular system is probably not going to be very good. But if you pair them together, I think that is where you can really thrive. Like, I've never been healthier or felt better than I am right now. Like, I'm literally PRing my lifts and PRing in races, like, both time and distance. And I think it's just because they go so well together. And so I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is people think, like, oh, if I go run, I'm going to get so skinny. And some people, that maybe they want to get skinny, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But like I've been skinny my whole life. I always wanted to like be a little bit bigger and like have muscle like most guys do. And so I always thought that's maybe another reason why I never wanted to get into running, because I just had that stereotype of, oh, all the runners I know are just skin and bones. So I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions is you can still be like muscular or still be able to do other things while also running.
I like that. That's cool. That is so true. Yeah. So true. I love that you, I also think what's so cool is, I mean, you talked about like going from kind of like smoking weed to running and that being your addiction, right? It's like, I know so many people that go through hard days or hard times in their life and they get it out through whether it's drugs or alcohol or just bad things, right? And what would you tell that person, and how would you change, like, how would you cause this entire mental shift for them to be like, yeah, I'm not gonna go to bed, like, I'm not gonna do all-nighters every weekend and drink and do drugs every weekend, and like, how do people get their lives together when they feel like they are in the dumpsters and they don't know how to get out?
That's a hard question because it's so subjective to everybody, but I think that idea of like you can't pour from an empty cup.
Yeah.
I think that would maybe apply to this, because if you're going out and like partying, like you're escaping your own reality.
Yeah.
But you're not doing anything for anybody else.
Right.
Like you're not making yourself better, not making anybody else around you better. And maybe people are okay with that. But I think if you are like most people and you want to serve other people and provide value to the world, I think obviously drinking and drugs and all that stuff isn't going to do anything for anybody. And so maybe just taking that first step to like just go for like a 1 mile walk every day. I think walking's great in general, but if you're trying to get into running or exercising, I think walking is like the perfect transition to that, because anybody can walk. Like if you can stand up, you can walk essentially. And so just go for like a 20-30 minute walk every day. And walking itself is very meditative too. If you just leave your phone at home, just go out, be outside in the sun. I think walking is so good. And then eventually, like, I call it like landmark running. Where you're like, okay, I'm going to run from here to the fire hydrant. I'm going to run from here to the stop sign. And you do like little increments like that. And then you build up to like, okay, I'm going to run for half a mile or a mile. And I think building into things that way can help a lot. It's a tricky thing to navigate.
I think
like addiction is a real thing. Like, if you're addicted to alcohol or like if you're addicted to drugs or something, like, unfortunately, my mom, after their divorce, like, she, like, just straight alcoholic for a couple of years and, like, almost drank herself to death and had, like, near liver failure, all this stuff. And so that helped me realize, like, okay, that's not doing anything. Because I know how it affected me and her. I'm like, I can't go down that road either. Like, I'm going to steer clear of that. And I'll just run, basically, or try and work on my health. But Yeah, I think addiction is such a terrible thing, and it gets to a point where I think it can be out of people's control. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what addiction is, mm-hmm. literally. And so, I'm not a therapist. I don't know if this is a good answer or not.
No, it is though, because you're saying like just start somewhere that you feel is attainable. Like you think you feel lost, okay, just walk a mile every day.
Yeah.
See where your mind takes you. Yeah. Maybe don't use headphones like you do, and kind of let your mind escape and find your own therapy in that. But it's no one's going to make you do it. It's only you that is going to do that for you.
Yeah, that's the important thing. It's like, nobody can help you besides you.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, too, is, I don't know, you hear that I've done, like, marathons or ultra marathons or whatever. Like, that's not where you have to start. Like, I started with just doing a mile a day.
Yeah.
I think you got to start somewhere.
Right,
and just start small, get those little wins, and slowly work your way up. And a lot of it just takes time, I think.
I agree. And I think we've all been in dark times. I think most athletes... if you think this is correct, I think most athletes have had dark times. And I think that's what makes them perform at their highest level.
100%. Yeah, because I kind of talked about it earlier, but if you don't have any adversity in real life, then when you get some adversity in running or during your sport, it's like, how are you going to get through that if you don't have any experience outside of that? And I think it kind of goes the opposite way, too. I call it voluntary adversity, where you put yourself into an uncomfortable situation intentionally and you learn how to navigate that. So then when something real pops up in life, you already know how to navigate it and go through it. Like when I was training for this 100K, like 2 weeks before the race, I did back to back 20 miles. So Saturday I did 20 miles, Sunday I did 20 miles and I did not want to do that. It was not fun, but I just kept telling myself, I'm like, okay, this sucks. This is some adversity for sure. But it's like, I'm doing it because I chose to.
Yeah.
And so if you show up and you can get through that and do it, then when life throws some real shit at you, you're better equipped to handle it.
It's so true. It's also crazy that you don't use headphones either.
Yeah.
I know a lot of runners don't. I know Nick Bear doesn't. A lot of runners don't. And I think it is a peace of mind. Like we said, meditation. I should probably try that because it is meditation for me. I do listen to music.
Whatever helps you get it done. I think it's the most important thing.
It's just wild to run that long without any music.
Yeah, I was tempted several times. I didn't take headphones with me because I knew if I had them there, I might want to use them. But Drew, my videographer, he had my phone the whole time because he was getting clips and stuff. And a few times I almost asked him, I was like, hey, could I have my phone for this lap so I can distract myself and I don't look at Instagram or something while I'm running? And I'm like, no, I'm not out here to go through Instagram.
Yeah.
I'm out here to learn more about myself. I'm not going to learn anything by scrolling through Instagram.
That's
so
really cool.
I think a lot of it just depends on like what you're trying to get out of it.
Yeah.
If you just want to be physically healthy and you want to, become a better runner, like you can go and run with music or headphones. Yeah. It's not going to, detract from the physical standpoint. But I don't know if I necessarily run for the physical benefits, more so the mental side of things. And so that's where... intentionally not running with my phone or headphones lets me just lean into the mental side of things more. So it depends on what your goals are, I think.
Hey, if you're listening to this, if you don't want to go to therapy, can't afford therapy, go run. Don't listen to music, see what happens, get back to us.
I will arguably running could be more expensive depending on how far into it you get. Like I spent so much money on gels and shoes and gear and clothes. Like the lie of running is a free sport. It's definitely a lie.
Depends how far you go.
Yeah.
That's so funny. What do you typically have for your pre-running snack, fuel, and then post?
It's always kind of changing because I like to experiment with different things.
Yeah.
But for the most part, for like a regular like midweek run, I usually do those fasted. So I'll like wake up in the morning.
In the morning, yeah.
And I'll do those fasted just because that helps your body learn how to burn fat. Before a big workout or a long run or a race, I'll do... Mm-hmm. Have you heard of two before? It's like a blackcurrant powder. Black currant's a type of berry that is grown in New Zealand.
Oh.
And they figured out... Have you heard like the benefits of beet juice for running? It's like that, but even more. So I drink this blackcurrant powder because it helps with like cardiovascular performance and vasodilation, all this scientific stuff. So I have that. And then electrolytes. I drink electrolytes every day. I think that's so big. I think even if you don't exercise... you should drink electrolytes, especially if you exercise. Like if you're sweating at all, I think you need to replenish with electrolytes.
I recommend Switchback.
Yeah, I've heard they're really good. Shameless plug. Yeah, electrolytes every day. especially before a run. And then again, if it's a long run, I will do a carb mix, like a powdered carb mix, either like Morton or Scratch, just because it's so much easier for your body to digest the liquid calories as opposed to putting a bunch of solid food in there. I used to do like a banana, peanut butter, and a bagel, and that works for some people, but for me, it's just like, it's so hard to eat at like 6 in the morning to get a bunch of food down, so it's easier to just drink it for me. And then during ultras, everybody loves it. It's the weirdest thing, but I'll drink milk.
Okay, Jeremy, I saw that, and I was like, is he drinking milk, or is it like a milk carton with water in it? I was gonna ask you before this, actually. I was like, did you drink milk?
It's milk. It's raw milk, to be specific. Okay. So, but for whatever reason, my body just like craves milk when I'm running.
That's so funny. I mean,
it has so many nutrients. It has carbs, fats, proteins, like substantial amounts of all those. It's got electrolytes in it.
Yeah.
It's got easy to digest liquid calories.
Yeah.
And the raw aspect.
Unless you're lactose intolerant.
But however, I used to think I was lactose intolerant because I would drink store-bought pasteurized milk. My stomach would just hurt. I'd get like bubble guts, for lack of a better term. And I looked it up and it said that pasteurized milk can actually like cause gut issues for a lot of people, because when you pasteurize milk, it kills the digestive enzymes.
Yeah.
It kills all the bacteria, including the good bacteria.
Wow.
So your body has a hard time processing it. And so the raw milk has all the bacteria in it, all the good bacteria included.
Hmm.
So it helps your body process it. As long as you're getting it from like a good reputable farm.
Where do you go?
There's a place here called Local Pastures.
Okay, cool.
Downtown Austin.
Yeah.
And they get it from a local farm.
Nice.
But I grew up drinking milk. Like, we just have like a glass of milk for dinner.
I did too.
Yeah.
I did too.
So I think I've just always enjoyed it for some reason.
That's
but,
so funny.
Yeah. And it works great because it has so many calories in it. It has all the macros.
Yeah.
And so for, I would never do it during like a marathon because you're running so much faster. But for like an ultra where you're out there for like 9, 10 hours or longer, it's like you need food, you need calories.
Yeah.
And it's just so easy to process.
That's so interesting.
It's very interesting.
So funny. And what about post-race?
Milk, some milk for sure. And then, oh my gosh, after this race we went to Five Guys, I was just like, give me the greasiest cheeseburger we can find. So we found a Five Guys like a few minutes down the road.
Nice.
There's actually a study on this too, that if you're decently trained and you in general eat a pretty healthy diet, they took these two groups of athletes, both well trained, both had good diets and everything. And then post-workout, they gave one group, I think it was like In-N-Out or some kind of like popular fast food. And they gave the other group like whole foods, like meat, fruit, vegetables. And the recovery status didn't change at all between the two groups. And so I took that as, okay, after a big workout or like a race or something, like your body just wants calories. And so just go and just get calories in, basically.
Nice.
And yeah, I had a milkshake and a cheeseburger. And it was like, I think just getting in some kind of food and calories, whatever you're going to be able to get down. Obviously, you're probably better off with like some steak or fruit and vegetables and stuff.
Hey,
but at that time, I was like, just give me a cheeseburger.
Yeah. I remember my first half marathon, I did it in Malibu, and I remember all I wanted like afterwards was something hearty. Like I wanted a burger or something. And I remember a lot of places were closed. There was a lot of traffic. And I remember like my mom came to watch me and she's like, let's just go across the street, see what they had. And it was like a salad was the only thing. And I'm like, I don't want a salad now. I literally would rather not eat right now.
Yeah.
I want something hearty. So that's really funny. That's really funny. And I think what's so cool too is, I mean, everything we're talking about, like it's what you love and you've made this into your full-time job as a digital content creator. Was it always like this?
No, definitely not. So I got one of the first GoPros. I was like the GoPro 3 or something when I was in high school. And I was like 15. And I would just make stupid little GoPro videos with my friends. Like we'd be skateboarding or playing tennis or just the most random things. And
it was
terrible videos, but they were fun to just shoot things, put it into iMovie, learn how to edit it, put music with it. I thought that process was so cool. And just being able to document things and like have that video to look back on forever was cool. So I did that for a couple of years. And I always thought it would be cool to be able to turn that into a living or do it full time. But I could never figure out, like, how could I do this for a living? Nobody wants these shitty GoPro videos. And then when we moved to Hawaii for a year in college, we made a YouTube channel and we committed to doing one weekly vlog of like, okay, we're going to show what we're eating and the beaches we're going to and hikes and stuff.
Yeah.
And that turned into like being able to talk on camera. Those first videos were so bad. Like, we didn't know how to talk. We didn't know how to even hold the camera. Like, just so inexperienced and so bad, so awkward.
Yeah.
And then we did that for about a year, and we slowly got better because we did it every week. I had a lot of friends and family at home in Wyoming that were like, hey, when you get back from Wyoming or from Hawaii, will film my wedding, or will you film this commercial for my business? And I'm like, okay. So I would do like these little jobs for like $100, a couple hundred dollars. And then that turned into, I was supposed to go to law school, like after I graduated from college. And then I was making enough money in college doing editing and shooting videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I like this a lot more than going to law school. Mm-hmm. What if I just take a year or two off of school and we'll just try out this freelance photo and video thing? So I did that full time for 2 or 3 years of just doing freelance photo video, like real estate, weddings, anything you can do with freelance, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was cool because I was shooting and editing video for a living, but I didn't love it because it was like real estate and weddings. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't the most exciting thing. And so then in 2021, I hit up a friend in Wyoming who I knew ran 100 mile races. And this is when I was first started getting into running. And there's like a handful of ultra marathon documentaries on YouTube. And I was just sitting at home watching these. And I was like, it'd be so cool to shoot one of these. So I hit up my friend who I knew ran hundreds. And I was like, hey, do you want to let me come and film one of your races one time? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I actually have 400 mile races this summer. So we'd come film those. So I put together this documentary. It's like 50 minutes on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And it just took off. It has like 700,000 views or something, which is cool. That kind of gave me some confidence of like, okay, I could actually like do something with this skill of photo and video. And I love running, so maybe I could pair them together. And then that led me to, you know, BPN, Nick Barrett. So I worked for them for about 8 months in 2022, doing all of Nick's like personal content, running his YouTube channel, his Instagram, his personal stuff. And did that for 8 months. And that's what brought us out to Austin. And then after about 8 months, I was like, I feel like I could probably do this on my own if I wanted to. I could build up a personal brand. I could see all these trends and on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube. And I was like, I could just make myself the subject and do this for myself and build up my own personal brand. And so I left in August of 2022 to just do my own thing. And so it's been a little bit over a year. At the time, I think I had like 3,000 Instagram followers and like a very small YouTube channel and stuff. And now it's like 130,000 on Instagram and 30,000 YouTube subscribers. So it's crazy how quickly it blew up just by posting every single day, trying to provide as much value as I could. And using all those like trends and things that I found through Nick's content. Because I would test, I had like basically free reign to like do whatever I wanted with this content. So I would test all these different variables of like, okay, should I have him talking first in the beginning of the video, or should I have music, or should I show his face, or should I show him running? Like testing all these variables. And I found kind of this formula that seemed to perform better.
Yeah.
And so I just applied that to my own thing and blew up. Ish kind of
through YouTube,
Instagram mostly. That's where the biggest following is now, but YouTube especially. YouTube also, the short form stuff is what I'm mostly focused on, just like the reels and YouTube shorts. But because it's cool, because you can take the same piece of content, put it on Instagram and YouTube and TikTok, hit three different audiences. Lately I've been focusing more on the long form YouTube, like vlogs and the longer stuff, because there's a lot of value in that too. Long story short, I did not always do content like this, but always some kind of video and photo related things. And then now just converting that into being able to do it for myself.
That is so cool. Did you do it once you didn't work for BPN anymore? Were you so you did this full time?
Yeah. So I was all on my own, went to BPN for 8 months, and then back on my own for the last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it scary at first, kind of starting your own thing and not having a backup plan?
Yeah, definitely. Because at the time, my following wasn't big enough to do like any significant brand deals. Like they weren't really going to pay the bills. And so I started coaching people one-on-one for running and marathons and stuff. Because I had a lot of like, hey, I'm running my first marathon. I know you've done a couple. Do you mind helping me out?
Yeah.
So it started there. And then as my channel, my Instagram started growing, I would just put out like, hey, I'm coaching people for running.
Yeah.
But like run coach in my bio. And I started having a lot of people hit me up to help them with their races. And so that was like, I still do a little bit of that, but that was like a good kind of bridge to being able to do more content and like get paid by brands basically.
Yeah.
So now I do some one-on-one coaching, a few brand deals a month. Mm-hmm. And then now we launched Switchback, which is cool too. So now I have my own brand that I can promote and kind of use my personal pages to push people to that, which is awesome.
That's so cool. That's amazing how you started this on your own. Do you think it's possible for people to have a full-time corporate job and then have a side hustle and then have it like blow up like it has for you? Or do you really feel like it has to have its own attention, like 100% for it to be able to grow and become its
That's
own brand?
That's a good question. I think you can definitely do it on the side. Mm-hmm. Even like when I was at BPN, I started creating videos every day, maybe for like the last month or two. So I had a 9-to-5 job and I was doing one video a day on the side, just outside of work hours. And I think you can definitely do it.
Yeah.
It's obviously easier. Like I don't have kids.
Yeah.
Maybe not as many commitments as some people might have, but if anything's a priority to you, like you'll find the time to make it happen.
Yeah.
And so if your priority is to grow a personal brand, grow a following and an audience online, like if you just post it, I always tell people to post as much as you possibly can for yourself. Like if it's one time a week, do that. If it's 3 times a day, then do that. Like you really can't post too much, in my opinion. And so just do whatever is possible for you.
Yeah.
But I think, just starting somewhere and just getting content out and being willing to be vulnerable with people and show your story. And I think that's like Matt Choi always talks about is like document, don't create. I learned a lot from him too, because he kind of helped me with that transition from like working for somebody else to then creating a personal brand, because he obviously has a great personal brand now. And so he helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing I always remind myself is like, just document, don't create.
I like that.
Because if you're always like manufacturing and creating something, like you can get burnt out, you're going to run out of ideas. But if you just document what you're already doing, then like you don't really have to change anything. You just show people what you're already doing. I think that can help a lot too. Like I tell Brie all the time, she hates social media, she hates content, because she's like, I don't have anything to post. I don't have like any value to provide. And I'm like, everybody has something. Like everybody has such a unique perspective and take on things. That's where the documentation aspect comes in.
Right.
Just document your life and whatever you're doing, and it's gonna resonate with somebody, I think.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Do you think, well, I guess for you, did you post every day? Was that your consistency?
Yeah, so at first I told myself, okay, let's just post every day for like a week and see what happens, because I could see that it was the consistency that would help grow everything. So yeah, that was last August. And I've posted every day. I haven't missed a day since last August. So it's like December now. So 14 months or whatever that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So every day it's, I don't know how many, like 400 posts or something.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I tried doing that every day and I got so burned out and I just was like, I already need help sleeping more.
Yeah.
So I'm like just trying to do as many as I can a week and kind of stick to that right now.
I have a content calendar over there.
Okay.
That's a calendar. I've tried so many different tools to like build in.
Yeah, you have the whiteboard.
Yeah. And a physical whiteboard has been what's helped me the most. Like I have everything color coded of like, okay, this is a sponsored post.
Yeah.
This is like my post. This is a podcast that's going out. And it's like just a content calendar. I think that helps too.
Yeah.
And I think having the mindset of like, this goes for anything, of, okay, I want to be a content creator. How would a content creator go about this?
Yeah.
How would a content creator live every day? How would they treat their daily schedule?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, like I would spend an hour a day planning, shooting, editing a piece of content.
Yeah.
Because that's what a content creator would do. It's like you take on, you embody that persona.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps. Same thing with like a runner. Like when I first started running, I was like, I'm not a runner.
Mm-hmm.
But if I just started thinking, okay, what would a runner do? They'd probably go for a run first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And then you start doing it. And then over time, you just become that thing.
Yeah. Is there something you tell yourself in the morning? Like one, like an affirmation or like, I am a runner, whatever it is.
No, not particularly. I guess in a way, I'm just like, okay, I don't do a lot of affirmations. I journal every day.
Okay, cool.
And I think that helps. Just getting thoughts out.
Yeah.
On paper, I just type it out on my computer.
Yeah,
I think that helps a lot. As far as affirmations, not really.
Yeah, I mean, that's its own way. It's kind of what works for you.
Yeah.
And I also think that you might not call it affirmations, but it sounds like you do tell your mind
some
good things while you go on those runs.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I like, you know, having role models or, you know, looking up to people that are where you want to be.
Yeah.
I think that can help, because you start to, again, make that shift in your mind of like, okay, say you want to be like a David Goggins or like a Cam Haines or an Elon Musk, whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you start thinking like, how would they approach this situation?
Yeah.
Or how would they live their life? And you kind of start doing that. You slowly morph into that type of person.
Yeah.
Like I just read the Steve Jobs biography. Have you read that?
No, I should though.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And the same guy who wrote that just came out with an Elon Musk one. So I'm reading that one right now too.
Okay, it's on my list because I was actually looking for a new book to start. So yeah. There we go. What was your biggest takeaway from the Steve Jobs book?
One of the things I like, because this applies so much to what we're doing with Switchback, mm-hmm. is Apple, I don't know what they do now, but at least in the Steve Jobs Apple days, they never did any kind of market research.
Okay.
Like, because his mindset was, why would we give people what they already know that they want? Like, why would we give them something that they just want? Yeah. Instead of, why don't we create and provide something that people, they don't yet know what they want, mm-hmm. if that makes mm-hmm. sense. So he's like, nobody knew they wanted an iPhone, but they innovated and created an iPhone, mm-hmm. and they told people why they should want an iPhone, and I mean, now everybody has an iPhone. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing is interesting, because I think it's so easy to follow trends, and like, oh, this mm-hmm. brand is doing this, it seems like it works, let's just do that.
Yeah.
But if you innovate and invent something that has never been done before, and then you can give that to people, I mean, that's where innovation comes from.
Right.
It's just, you know, obviously creating something that nobody knows about yet, so... Yeah. I think that aspect is cool. And Steve Jobs kind of lived at this like intersection of creativity and art and science. Like, he was never an engineer or really knew how to code or anything, but he understood how to like create good products mm-hmm. because he understood people. And then he understood like the art and design aspect, which I thought was cool. So it was like, that describes Apple perfectly. It's like they're a tech company, but they're also like an art company, if that kind of makes sense. I don't know. There's so many things I can talk about. It's such a good book.
Yeah. Okay. I have to read it. Jeremy, what's next for you? You just did this insane race. Yeah. What's next?
I have the London Marathon in April. That one will just be for fun.
Just for fun.
Yeah. We're going to do like a full like 10-day vacation over there. So we'll go. I won't like race it or anything. I'm not trying to hit a PR. Just that one for fun. I'm doing the OC Marathon on Cinco de Mayo. So like 2 weeks after April or after London, which will be cool.
Fiesta.
That one again will just be fun for fun. I did that one last year. That one was cool. They like invited me out.
Yeah.
Which is fun. So, and then I have my main race for next year will be the Bighorn 100. So it's a 100-mile mountain race in Wyoming.
Your hometown?
Yeah, so I've done 50 miles there twice.
Okay.
And it's a brutal course. It's like, I think you gain and lose like 22,000 feet of elevation across the 100 miles. So you're like up and down mountains. It'll probably take me like 30 hours.
Insane.
But yeah, that'll kind of be the main race. And then the New York City Marathon.
Okay.
November next year. Probably some other stuff like
that. Are you doing Austin or no?
I'll probably do the half, I think, just for fun.
Yeah.
Saying I'm going to do a half marathon for fun. Like,
you're hilarious. Yeah.
Your perspective changes like when you start doing more of these. It's like a drug, I'm telling you.
It's so funny. I hope I can do the half this year. I have an injury, so I'm hoping I'll be good by then.
Nice.
But,
heck yeah. I've never done Austin. I've heard it's a really fun race.
It is
fun. I spectated last year.
It's fine. One day a marathon. But, I'll have to work myself up to your level.
You can do it.
Or half your level.
But the crazy thing, talking about perspective, like, leading into the 100K this weekend, I was like, oh my gosh, 100K is so far. I've never gone this far before.
Yeah.
I knew I could probably do it, but I didn't really know.
Yeah.
Like, I was saying that at the beginning, like, you don't ever know until you actually go out and try. And then as soon as I finished the 100K, as soon as like my watch hit 62 miles, I was like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
Mm.
I should have done the 100-mile version. Why did I just stop at 62? And maybe that's like part of the mindset that forces me to keep doing these crazier and crazier races. But I think like now a marathon seems like, oh, I could go do a marathon tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But before I did that first marathon, it seemed so impossible.
Mm.
And then... as soon as you do it, your perspective just shifts, which is cool. So it's so like,
cool.
To you, like, you've done a half marathon, right?
Yeah.
So did a half marathon, like, really intimidate you that much?
No, it was during the flu, yes. But you did it. But my first one, I was like, I didn't train for my first one at all. Like, at all. I was like, I just want to do this. I definitely should have trained because I could not move the next day.
Training helps.
But the second one I trained for, I trained fairly, like, to be honest. Yeah. I was like lately trained. I am always working out, but you know. And I wasn't sore. I was chilling. I was good.
The second one was the flu one?
Yes.
Yeah. So now, like, doing a half marathon with the flu, if you were feeling good, you're probably like, oh, I could go do a half marathon. Like,
yeah.
It's like your perspective just changes as you continue to do these things, which I think is cool. So... that's how you end up. And I think, too, just being around people that do crazy things.
Oh, yeah. The energy.
Oh my gosh.
Like, surround yourself with people who feel, like, that same kind of passion and outlet and all the things. I didn't even have any goose dirt. I think I had, like, a little bit of one. for that toward the end because it got a little hilly at the end, and I got a little my mind. I was like, am I gonna faint with the flu? I was like, am I gonna pass out? Okay, I need like a little something.
I mean, if you don't train with them, I don't know if I'd recommend doing it for the first time in the middle of a race.
Yeah, I know, not the best. Yeah, I literally had tears in my eyes when I finished. Like, I almost started crying because it was so mentally hard with the flu. Yeah. Like, it was really hard. I was, it was really tough. Difficult. Yeah. We did it. We did it.
Did it give you confidence, though? The flu, I can go run a half marathon.
Hell yeah. Like, that translates to, like, I'll think about that now. I'm like, I did that. I could do this. Yeah. This is so easy now. So, it's so crazy how powerful those times in your life can translate into so many other things. Jeremy, I want to ask you my last and final question as I'm petting your adorable dog. Fit Food Junkies, our motto is addicted to health. So what are you addicted to?
I think addicted to just seeing what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
And pushing myself from a physical standpoint, which is obviously, as we talked about, tied into the mental side of things. Mm. So I think I'm just addicted to seeing what limitations I have and what my potential is. Because again, I think, kind of said it earlier, but I think we leave so much untapped potential on the table with everything. And so just addicted to pushing more and more and more and seeing what else we can do. Sometimes be maybe not the healthiest addiction.
Yeah.
But
I love
that's right.
It. I love it. And how can people connect with you?
Instagram is probably the best way. It's if you just search Jeremy Miller, you should find me. YouTube. There's no DMs on YouTube, but you could check out some content there. And then TikTok. I don't really engage much on TikTok. I kind of do the post and ghost on TikTok, but Instagram is probably the best way. Or my website. It's jeremymiller.io.
Thank you so much. You are awesome. It is so cool to do this in your podcast studio here.
Yeah.
With your dogs.
The dogs. Awesome. They are, they make the experience a little more interesting.
I love it. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You're the best.
Thank you guys so much for listening today. Connect with Jeremy Miller at jeremymille.r and connect with me at Fit Food Junkies. Let's go stronger, faster, and farther together. I am so excited that you are joining the Fit Food Junkies journey with me.